Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How can you inspire an audience and steal the show? Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here, helping you to get 1% better each and every day. Today, we're going to learn how to nail every performance at work and on stage. But first, I want to encourage you to visit leadx.org, sign up for our 60-second newsletter. Each issue has actionable tips you can try right away to improve your productivity and advance your career. Just visit leadx.org. Our guest today was once a professional actor, having received his MFA from NYU's prestigious graduate acting program. He guest starred on shows like Sex and the City and Law and Order. More recently, you may have seen him offering communication advice on MSNBC, CNBC, and PBS. He is a New York Times bestselling author of 6 books, including Book Yourself Solid and Steal the Show. He's also the host of the popular podcast, Steal the Show with Michael Port. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. I like what you did with my bio. It was well cut.
You offer great material on your different websites. So, you know, it's all in the source material.
Oh, thanks.
So, Michael, we're going to talk about Steal the Show in just a minute, but we like to provide our listeners with some high energy, high value stuff right out of the gate. So we're going to really dive into some quick lightning round questions. You up for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So what advice would you give to a young professional who is eager to get ahead in her career?
Find someone who is doing what you want to be doing and then ask them if you can hold their coffee cup.
Oh, love that.
Figuratively. Although I suppose literally too. That's what I did when I started as an actor. I found, you know, I sought out experienced professional actors. I said, listen, let me just apprentice under you. Let me just, you know, help you run lines. Let me hold your coffee cup. I just want to be around and see how you do what you do. Same thing in martial arts. I trained in martial arts for 20 years. You apprentice under people who have mastered the discipline. And when I started in business, I did the exact same thing. I found people who were doing what I wanted to do. I said, listen, you don't have to pay me anything. I will just help. You give me extra work that you need done, I'll do it. Whatever it takes, I want to learn. And I'll do it for this length of time. And, you know, are you willing? And generally they'd say, yeah, sure.
That's fantastic advice. You know, early on, it's not so much about maximizing your compensation, but maximizing that knowledge. And I imagine it's some early networking as well.
Indeed. It's interesting because you just said something that struck a chord with me, that in the early days, it's not so much about maximizing your compensation, but about maximizing your education, your relationships. You know, your path is what you're creating at that early stage, because you don't generally start earning a lot of money until later on, after you've had a number of years in pursuit of your big goals. Once you achieve mastery in something is really when the bigger money starts to roll in. So use your time in the early days to focus on mastery, because the quicker you can master something, the more likely it is you'll start to really, really earn based on that mastery.
Love it. So tell us about a time that you personally failed as a leader. What was a lesson you might have learned?
Well, how much time do you have, Kevin? Because we could be here for a while. I'd say one that comes to mind that was more recent was not making some personnel changes soon enough, waiting too long. And it's important to give people an opportunity to grow and develop. When you're in a leadership position, you want to mentor and train and do whatever you can to help people move forward in their work so that it is on par with what's needed in their role. But I didn't have the courage to make some changes that I knew I needed to make soon enough, because I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to fill those spots, so to speak. And I finally got my act together and I did it and it worked out wonderfully, but I didn't do it soon enough. So sometimes you know a thing needs to be done and yet you don't do it soon enough, and you're looking for reasons not to do it because doing it seems like the harder thing to do, but eventually becomes untenable and then you do it anyway. So why get to that point?
Well, you really, you hit on one of my biggest failures and big ongoing struggles. And I think that just as you described, whenever I've been slow to fire, and even when I intend to do it in a compassionate way, I'd realize I'm delaying it just because I don't want to go through, you know, that uncomfortable situation myself. But whenever I've done it, I mean, usually it's not a good position for the person in question either. So it's better to get it done sooner rather than later. So many high achievers that I speak to, it seems like they have specific morning routines. I'm just curious, do you? Like, what does a typical morning look like in your world?
I don't think my morning routine is quite as rigid as some others may be. But, you know, generally I wake up about 5:30. Maybe I'll take a shower. Maybe not if I took one the night before. And I'll wait 30 minutes before I have breakfast. When I have breakfast, I'll take a whole series of supplements and vitamins, which I find helpful for a number of reasons, which aren't really relevant to your audience. But the point is, the reason I mention it is because there are things that I know I need to improve health-wise, and I do my best to try to improve those things, to work on them. Then I'll eat my breakfast while I read the paper. I read it online, of course, these days. I read the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and a couple of other mainstream larger publications. And then I'll dig into emails that came in at the second half of the day or maybe the last third of the day prior. And then the kids get up and, you know, start helping them with the things they need. Once they're off, right back at it for about another hour working through email. And then my schedule starts. So the morning routine is not what's most important for me. What's most important for me is the way my calendar is scheduled. So the way that I have my calendar scheduled is inside out. I generally will not book anything after 3:30 in the afternoon unless it's essential. If Oprah calls, she can have me whenever she wants. And I don't generally book anything before 10 a.m. with other people. I need that time before 10. I need that time after 3:30 for myself and for my family. But we book Wednesday first in the middle of the day. Then we work out until that 10 and around 3 o'clock, 3:30 time. Then we do the same for Tuesday, middle out. Then the same thing for Thursday, middle out, before we book Mondays and Fridays. And generally, we try to keep Mondays and Fridays open so that I can do business development work or take those days off if I prefer. But I find that if you book a little bit, you know, you book all these random times throughout the week and fill up your whole week with lots of openings in between, you know, different appointments you have over the phone or in person, then you end up wasting a lot of time. And I don't really like waste. So I like to batch the work that I do.
Michael, my listeners know that I spend a lot of time and focus on what I call it extreme productivity. I've researched it, written about it. And I got to tell you, this is the first time I've heard of this inside out idea. I just started scribbling notes like crazy. And I really like it. I often will talk about putting themes into your schedule, either a theme for each day of the week, or like in my case, I try to do creative work in the morning, collaborative work in the afternoon, and then I call it connecting at night, which is really connecting socially. But you've taken it to another level, because even if you've time blocked some of that work time, you're saying, look, let's schedule it from the inside out to protect those buffers on the end, or the bumpers on each side of it. That's brilliant.
Yeah, thanks. It wasn't something that I sat down and conceived of in brilliant fashion. It just developed over the years because I wanted Fridays off. I don't like being thrown into a melee on Mondays, and I don't work well at night. I've never been somebody who can stay up late and work, and I do well in the earlier part of the days. So that's just how it's developed over time. And we stick to it, you know, pretty religiously. We really do our best to adhere to that. And of course, rigidity is generally not something that serves you. So we like to be flexible when necessary, but we don't want to be watery. We want to be clay-like so that we're more adaptable.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So, Michael, your most recent book is Steal the Show, How to Guarantee a Standing Ovation for All the Performances in Your Life. And I'm sure many listeners are hoping we're going to talk about the specific tips about how to tell a joke or walk the stage. And your book does have all of that great stuff, very practical stuff. But what I found was some of the most powerful stuff you wrote about wasn't so much the stuff that would take place on the stage. You could really use it every day, in your life. And the first question I want you to address, because I think there could be some people, you know, wondering, Kevin's always talking about authenticity, and so many leadership gurus are talking about authenticity. And now we're talking about playing roles and how to act. So tell us, you know, how do you feel about authenticity? How do you reconcile the two?
So I wrote Steal the Show for all people, not just for people who expect that they're going to need to be on a stage giving a speech of some kind or a presentation of some kind. Because if you think about life, it seems that life is made up of a series of high-stakes situations, among other more mundane and pedestrian activities. But the high-stakes situations are the things that determine often the quality of your life. So how you perform during those high-stakes situations will often determine the quality of your life. So if you fall flat when the spotlight's on you, not much happens. But if you can shine, if you can take the stage, so to speak, when the spotlight's on you, well, then you can do big things in the world. And one of the concepts that I addressed is the idea of playing lots of different roles with authenticity. You know, this idea of authenticity, I think, is bandied about quite often. It's become a bit of a buzzword. And often when people are told, you know, when people are given advice on public speaking or performance, they're just told to be themselves. But that's not always really easy advice to act on, because which part of yourself should you be? Because I think we're more than one thing. We have more than one way of being. So the way that I interact with my friends from high school, it's a little bit different than the way that I interact with the people on the board of a company that I sit on. You know, I have a different role when sitting on that board than I do with my friends from high school. I have a different role as a father to my children than I do when I'm a guest on a podcast. I have a different role with my staff than I do when I'm with my clients or my students. And every single person gets a different part of me that's uniquely me. No one's ever going to say, oh, I didn't recognize that, Michael, but my role is different. My responsibilities in that role are different. And if we can identify what our responsibilities are in a role, then we know what role in a given situation, then we know what role to play in any given situation. And we can then be a lot more fluid. We can move in and out of different groups easily, move out of in and out of different situations easily. And it gives us access to so much more. People often get constrained by their idea of themselves. And they will say, well, I do that, I don't do that, I am this, I am not that, without even trying the things that they say they are not. And what I'm asking is, I'm asking folks to think a little bit more like a performer, because a performer is playing different roles all the time. That's what they do. But the best performers in the world do so authentically. So if you think about Tom Hanks, when Tom Hanks plays Sully in the movie about the airplane pilot who landed the plane in the Hudson River, he is playing a different role than when he plays Captain Phillips in the movie about the ship captain who was kidnapped by pirates. But each role is played authentically. He's bringing a different part of his personality to those roles. And the reason you like him so much is because he's so honest. You believe him so sincerely. He doesn't think he's those people. He's not insane. He doesn't actually think he's Captain Phillips, but he is so committed to the objectives that that character has that he tries every tactic he can possibly think of to achieve those objectives. And as a result, his character, as written by the, filmmaker, achieves those objectives. And the same thing is true in life. If you're clear on what your objectives are and you're willing to try any tactic you can possibly think of within your moral and ethical value system, then you might find there's different ways of behaving. So I had a guest on my podcast recently named Chris Voss, and he was a former FBI hostage negotiator. And he was talking about the three different voices that he uses when he was negotiating with hostage takers. Now, he's usually over the phone. And he says there's a late night FM DJ voice. There's the playful voice, and then there's the assertive voice. So the late night FM DJ voice is a little more like this and is slow and hopefully soothing. And then there's the playful voice, which is brighter and has a little bit more sort of activity in it and maybe a little bit more friendliness and usually comes across with a smile. And then there's the more direct, more assertive, very straight to the point, very clear, maybe a little bit more staccato style of speaking. Well, when you use in that particular case, those different styles of speaking, those different voice patterns, you're starting to play a different role, but you're choosing those voice patterns in order to accomplish a particular goal. But yet all people have different ways of communicating, and you don't have to have only one style of communication. There are times when I'll be very assertive, very direct, very straightforward, and it, can be a little bit like boom, 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 little punches in the gut. There are times when I'll use a really playful voice and, and be really fun and quite bright. And then the other times where I'll tone it back, slow it down, and be a little bit more reflective in the style that I use. But they're all me. They're not, you're not pretending to be something other than you are. You're just playing different roles given what's needed in that particular situation. And they're all authentic.
Related to authenticity, sort of a close cousin is this idea of vulnerability. And you are very vulnerable in your book. I mean, it really surprised me. It's part of what, makes it so great is you're sharing your successes and also, your lessons learned along the way. And literally my favorite part, you talk about how back when you were an actor, you would get ready for an audition by getting the script from your agent. You'd hunker down in a Starbucks. You'd read the script and try to anticipate what the casting director and director might be looking for in the role. And that seemed very reasonable to me. But then you said you realized that you had it all backwards. And it was years later that you figured this out. Tell the listeners more about what you're referring to and what should you have done in that case.
When I was an actor, I was very concerned with what other people wanted. Most people who go into acting don't go into acting because they don't want approval. It's part of the appeal. Often the people clap for you, say, "Oh, you did a great job." But when I'd get a script, I'd look at it and I'd think, well, what do you think they're looking for here? What's the casting director want? What's the director want? What's the producer want? And as a result, I'd go in not making strong choices. I'd make choices that I think were safe choices based on what they wanted. But the performer's job is to break the rules by making big choices. Not break the rules just to be rebellious, but to do things that people might not even have thought of doing. That's what entrepreneurs do. It's what creative artists do. It's what inventors do. It's what authors do. Trying to do things in ways that have not been done before that might even seem like they're impossible. Or why would anyone do a book with illustrations, you know, that's a business book, you know, things that you wouldn't normally expect. And I found it didn't work very well. And it wasn't until I went into business for myself later on when I realized that what I should have done is go in there and make very strong choices, show the casting director what they're looking for. Because the casting director, they just don't want to get fired. That's their big fear. And it's a legitimate fear, because often what happens is if the director doesn't find the actress that they want, they'll let the casting director go and they'll bring in a new casting director. But that casting director that comes in is just going to bring in the same actors, because there's a small handful of actors in LA and New York that actually get the auditions. So they're just trying to shake things up, but it doesn't really make that much of a difference ultimately. Then the director often doesn't know what he or she is looking for until they see it. And sometimes a director who's directing, say, a big film may never have directed a film like this before. Maybe they've been doing music videos and they're the hot, you know, new thing, and they just were given $150 million to do a movie. And they're thinking, geez, I hope this actor doesn't ask me what to do, because I don't know what to tell them. I just want them to do it. And then the producer, you know, they're thinking, well, listen, in my case at least, well, this person's not a star. So do I have enough star power in the film to cast this person in this role? And they want you to prove to them, to force them to cast you, for them to say, I have to cast this person. What they did was so strong. The choices they made were so strong that they leave me with no choice except to cast them. And the same thing is true in business. The same thing is true, you know, when you're writing a book and you're trying to get it sold to a publisher. If you go in there thinking, what do they want? Then you often water yourself down and you don't make strong choices that make a difference and show them what they're looking for. Now, that doesn't mean you don't think about what other people are looking for. You absolutely do. But sometimes you're going to find that what they're looking for is not actually what they need. One of the jobs that I applied for when I left acting was for a position for which I was completely unqualified. I had absolutely no business applying for this job, because I had none of the qualifications, none of the experience, and none of the certifications that they thought were appropriate. But I got myself in for an interview. I talked my way into it through networking. And I said, listen, I know that I don't have any of the qualifications you think you need. I don't have any of the certifications that you traditionally look for. I don't have the experience that you think I should have. But let me tell you why I think you're looking for the wrong thing. Now, what do I have to lose? I don't have the job. So all I have to lose is them saying, dude, who the hell are you? Get out of my office. But the reward for taking the big chance and making the big choice was significant. And I was able to present it in such a way that they went, huh, I think that's right. I'm going to take a chance on you. And I had a very strong case about why I thought they were looking for the wrong type of person for that particular role. And that one worked out. But there are other times when things aren't going to work out. But the key is you making the strong choice, you going in there and you laying the groundwork, you setting the path, you blazing a trail.
And Michael, I want to highlight, like, if for the listeners out there, if you think, well, you know, how does this apply to me? I'm just a whatever your role is. It applies to everyone. I mean, I really put the book down and thought about this. And even my own team members over the years, I think about, no matter what the role is, the people who excelled were the ones that were coming in with a strong point of view, with some bold ideas. Now, maybe I shot some of those ideas down, but I still appreciated what they were bringing. You know, I don't want to have to tell my assistant how to work my calendar. I'd love for my assistant to say, hey, here's a better idea for how we can work together, you know, with your calendar. So whatever your role is, I mean, it's natural to seek the approval of your boss or your peers, But I think part of that approval is going to be, hey, I approve of you coming into my office with some big ideas, no matter what role you have.
That's exactly right. We actually interviewed somebody for a position in our financial department yesterday. And we were saying, so listen, you know, we work with people who are not ahead of us, meaning my wife and I who run the company, when it comes to the financial aspects of the business. But we need people who are ahead of us, because if you have an area of specialty, you need to be ahead of the people that are hiring you for that position. It doesn't make sense if we're the ones saying, okay, this is what we need here, here, and here, and here, because that's not our area of expertise. So if you're always looking for someone else to give you direction, as opposed to making your own choices, you're going to have a hard time. You know, one of the reasons that I wrote about how acting can apply to all different aspects of our life is because, you know, Shakespeare said all the world's a stage, and there's so many similarities. And one of the things that you find as a young actor is that you think the directors are the ones who are going to help you produce a great performance, because when you're young, they do, because they need to. But as you get out into the professional world, you realize that directors rarely will give you direction. If you work on a movie, the director will say, okay, I want you to go here and then here and then here. They may block it out because, you know, they've set up a shot list, but they don't tell you what choices to make. They're hiring you because of what you bring to it. And the same thing is true in the corporate world. You're hired because of what you can bring, not based on your ability to take direction from someone.
Now, Michael, I'm going to try to keep you on schedule today. So really quickly, before we wrap up, you know, we like to challenge our listeners, though, to get better every day. So what's something really practical that you want to challenge our listeners, something they could do today to implement some of what you're talking about?
I think that each day, if you can choose one thing to do that makes you uncomfortable, and do it anyway, you're likely to do big things in the world. Choose just one thing that makes you uncomfortable to do every day, and you'll do big things in the world.
And Michael, what's the best way our listeners can find out more about you, your books, and your events?
HeroicPublicSpeaking.com. HeroicPublicSpeaking.com is a great place to go. Lots of freebies, good videos to watch on training for public speaking. You can also go to michaelport.com. There's a whole bunch of different things over there that I do. You can also see all the different books that I've written. Or if you want to go buy a copy of Steal the Show or any of the other books I've written, just go to Amazon and put in Michael Port. You'll see them all come up.
All right, friends, you've just been mentored by Michael Port, an entrepreneur, author, and speaker who truly knows how to master life's performances. You can get Steal the Show from Amazon.com or your favorite bookstore, and you'll get all the links he just mentioned in the show notes over at leadx.org. If you have a question for me, just send me an email. I'm at kevin@leadx.org. Until next time, remember this quote. Michael mentioned it from Shakespeare. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.